You are listening to IPR podcasts from the Catholic University of America's Institute for Policy Research.
I'm a fellow at the IPR, the Institute for Policy Research at Catholic University.
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard of us.
Tell me about you.
All right. Well, this might seem redundant, but it is a working group of scholars at Catholic University dedicated to integrating Catholicism within their respective fields.
Okay.
So there are different, there are different working groups. My working group is the Foreign Affairs Working Group, and our current endeavor is to get together a series of podcasts to put on the website and to just to broaden people's horizons, to get people talking and knowing about what we're doing.
Okay, good.
And I thought of you because I've known about your work for years now. This goes way back to when I was a seminarian with the Fraternity of St. Peter back in the early 2000s, and okay. I came across Culture Wars magazine on the library bookshelf, and I was just completely blown by the whole tenor of the conversation and what you were saying. This alternate discussion, this alternate mentality of Catholic thought, which I had never come across before. And it's probably no surprise to you that I found your work at the fraternity, being traditionalist. But since then, I've gone on to get a PhD in politics, and I've really become interested in, my focus is theory in my politics degree, but the second one was American politics. And I've just been noticing more and more this clash between what our faith teaches and how the American government's behaving, especially since the end of World War II.
Yes, absolutely.
So that's what we do. And I'm from New York. I'll just let it out there right now. I know you're from Philly, right? Correct?
Yes. We always viewed New Yorkers with suspicion.
As you should. But I've been out of there for about 10 years. Well, actually about 8 years now.
I've been out of Philadelphia for 40 years.
Yeah.
Well, but I know they say you can take the boy out of Philadelphia, but you can't take Philadelphia out of the boy.
I think the same thing goes for New Yorkers. Whenever I get annoyed, my New York accent always comes out, right? But it seems like we've had a similar upbringing, but it's separated by generations. I know that you've talked about how you were raised in a Catholic neighborhood. Did you say it was Irish or German or
Irish?
Both, right. Okay.
Irish.
Okay. And how you eventually realized that you became a victim of social engineering, and this is what prompted you to found Fidelity Magazine. Is that correct?
No. That came later. What prompted me to found Fidelity Magazine was getting fired from St. Mary's College for being against abortion. At the beginning, I felt it was a completely intra-Catholic conflict. And then I realized, no, it's much bigger than that. It's Kulturkampf. It's very similar to what happened in Prussia at the time of the unification of Germany. Very similar to that. So I changed the magazine from Fidelity to Culture Wars.
That's the reason. Okay, I did not know that. Now that you mentioned that there's a lot of similarity between, but at least with Bismarck and the church, it was open, right? They were arresting priests.
Now you're getting into the differences.
Yeah.
The Catholics held together. They couldn't find a fifth column, and so it failed. And eventually, Bishop von Kettler got to Bismarck and convinced him that the communists were the real enemies, and he basically called off the Kulturkampf after 10 years. Are we recording?
Yes.
Good.
All right.
Good. I don't want this to. This is interesting. I might make sure we record it.
No, absolutely. So
that's what happened with Kulturkampf, and basically Bismarck did what von Kettler said, namely introduce health insurance and social security. And at that point, the Germans stopped emigrating, and at that point, they built up the German workforce. And within 30 years, they surpassed England because of the concentration and mobilization of German labor. And that led to World War I, and you know, we can go on and on and on there. But I mean, that was the crucial issue, and it was the crucial insight that I had when I was doing the Kroll biography. I'd been named official biographer of John Cardinal Kroll of Philadelphia. He let me into the archives, and it was a treasure trove of information that nobody knew anything about. the battles that were going on in the 60s. I described this in John Cardinal Kroll and the Cultural Revolution, which is available on the Culture Wars website. But that led me, after doing that book, it led me to do Slaughter of Cities, because I wanted to concentrate on the whole issue of social engineering. And that's the point where I realized I was a guinea pig in a social experiment. So it took me about, I'd say, 15 years to come to that understanding.
Okay, very good. Well, thanks for that description. And that's, that congruents with what I've come to realize as well. So you grew up in Philly, and I have the book, by the way. So you were the biographer to John Cardinal Kroll of Philadelphia, and as some of our viewers may or may not, he may or might know, he was the Archbishop of Philadelphia when all this unpleasantness started to brew and just come out in the 1960s.
Right. It was a crucial period.
So I grew up in Rockwell Center on Long Island, and the reason why I say we had similar upbringings, because I was raised in a Catholic family too. I went to a Catholic high school, Chaminade, run by the Marianists. But we were a generation apart, so it's kind of like we had the fallout. So it's like we were living what you've come to name as a deracinated society. We were aware that we had different ethnicities, but it didn't really have much to do with our characters. Most of the guys I went to high school with were Irish or Italian.
Married each other. They got married to each other and they became Irish Italians. That's exactly what happened. If you grew up on Long Island, you grew up as a refugee. Do you know what Lynbrook means?
It's Brooklyn backwards.
That's right. That's exactly what Lynbrook is. It's the reverse of Brooklyn. And the catch basin, my good friend Nino Langiuli grew up in Brooklyn. He never got over it. He taught at St. Francis College in Brooklyn until he retired. And he just never got over that. And in a sense, never knew what hit him. In a sense, everybody just did it. We just moved. We didn't realize it was ethnic cleansing at the time. So the Italians moved out and they married the Irish. And then at that point, you have a crucial issue here. What am I? Exactly. What am I? And this issue hit at exactly the same time that the Catholic Church is going through an identity crisis because of Vatican II. So it was the perfect storm. And you add to that the psychological warfare campaign that the CIA was conducting against the church at the Second Vatican Council through people like John Courtney Murray. You add to that the Jewish psychological warfare campaign against the church at the Vatican Council run by Malachy Martin. And you've got, I mean, it's a miracle that we're still here. It's a miracle that anyone survived.
Right, but it's proof of the divine origin of the church, right?
That's right.
That's the only argument that would hold. I mean, if this happened to any other religion, it wouldn't have. First of all, no other religion would have attracted this kind of attention. And secondly, it wouldn't have survived.
That's right.
So this has to do. So we've been talking about so far the internal workings of the church in American society, like beginning in the 60s with Vatican II, that big atom bomb that went off in Rome, and it found its way over here, the fallout, coupled with the racial tensions, the social instability of the 60s. I know about that just to research, and also my parents telling me. So the reason why I called you was to talk to you about a critique of American foreign policy. So it's taking the American government as such, and looking at it through the lens of the perennial teaching of the church and finding out exactly what its principles are, and then some examples of where it's really gone awry.
We're talking about the same group of people, just focusing on a different area. Okay, the WASP elite flooded into organizations like the CIA after World War II. Paul Blanchard was mobilizing this group of people with his book, American Freedom and Catholic Power. The line among this group of people at this time was that, well, we defeated fascism, and now we have the new fascism, otherwise known as the Catholic Church. And the Catholic Church is taking over the world, and we've got to do something about it. The WASP elite was unanimous Paul Blanchard was a celebrated figure. He's forgotten now, but he was a celebrated figure among these people. Establishment figures like Perry Miller, the great Puritan scholar, all of these people endorsed Paul Blanchard's book. And this meant that the Catholic Church was the enemy. Okay, now, specifically, when it comes to the Catholic Church, that meant Italy from foreign policy point of view. Italy was very important. The United States was worried that Italy was going to go communist. And so Harry Luce, who was the head of Time Life, which was the propaganda ministry for the CIA at this period of time, got his wife appointed ambassador to Italy. And they had their own operation in Italy to ensure that it wouldn't go communist. Now, the crucial, that was interesting, and you could go there, from there to the Second Vatican Council, because people like Ottaviani, at that point, when Pius XII died, Ottaviani went to John the 23rd and said, we're in trouble, because everybody knows that the communists are a threat, but the Americans are a threat too. And this is the same time that Fellini's film La Dolce Vita comes out.
Right.
The threat that America posed to traditional European culture was one of the driving forces behind Vatican II. Got hijacked, but that's another story. Right. But that was not, in many ways, the crucial issue after the United States recognized Israel was the involvement in the CIA involvement in toppling Mossadegh in Iran in 1953. This was a catastrophic event, okay? It was absolutely catastrophic, and you can lay it directly at the feet of the CIA, which at this point had become the de facto government of the United States of America when it came to foreign policy. Now, I'm not just saying this. Harry Truman said it, and he said it right after Kennedy was assassinated. So there's probably a message there, too. But Harry Truman was the man who approved the CIA, brought it into existence. And by the time he reached the 60s, 10 years later, he says, it's out of control. They're running their own operation here. So Kermit Roosevelt goes to Tehran. Mossadegh nationalized the oil company. It was run by the British. It was a ruthless exploitation of Iranian resources on the part of the British. The Iranians knew it. And the tragedy here is that they all looked to the Americans for help. The Americans could have simply cut the same deal with Iran that they cut with Saudi Arabia, and the world would be a different place. Instead, it's this wretched WASP ruling class who has more allegiance to the elites in England than they have to some dago in Brooklyn. And this is what wrecked America's foreign policy at this point. Mm-hmm. They go in and they basically overthrow Mossadegh, who had appeared on the cover of Time magazine. He was a significant figure. He had gone to the United Nations. The Iranians were just loved Americans. They were just hoping to get the same deal, and they didn't. And the America turned against them, and they put in the puppet, the Shah, and they have been regretting it ever since. That goes all the way to the present day, all the way to the point where whoever it was, the Houthi probably, they claimed responsibility. They shoot up that oil refinery in Saudi Arabia. And this is the point where America's got to move. Well, they can't do it now. They can't do it. Trump could not go to war. He fired Bolton instead. And now we have this impasse in the Persian Gulf that Trump cannot resolve. He cannot resolve.
That's right.
I think it's all traceable back to that, the founding of the CIA and that catastrophic mistake of deposing Mossadegh.
Okay, well, that's fascinating. So that was an excellent narrative of just that one example. And previous to that, you mentioned the interference in the Italian election, which I think was in 1948, unless I'm mistaken.
Or 47. It was throughout the 50s. They were involved throughout the 50s.
Okay, so not just one occasion. Okay, so the linking up of the CIA, which was the continuation of the wartime OSS, which itself had recruited a lot of Protestant upper class guys during the war, the guys who were intellectuals, who were clever, let's say, and they stayed in the business after the war. And you're saying they were the driving force behind American foreign policy.
Yes.
Which Harry Truman himself admitted, right?
Right.
And then
and which we found out the church hearings in the 1970s, 1976, exposed chapter and verse of how the CIA was involved in illegal activity.
Mm-hmm. Now, and it didn't stop there, right? Because they were involved in all sorts of, you know, supposedly drug running in the 1980s.
Right, right. That all came out in the church hearings. That all came out in the church hearings. Okay. So it was one of those moments where the truth came out for the exception. Okay.
The it's tragedy. There for people to read, pardon me? It's not. It's there for people to read, but it's not within the consciousness of the American public right now.
Right. Right? That's why God sent me to write these books. I'm trying to bring it to the consciousness. And the other thing I'm trying to bring out is the tragedy of the Catholic Church in this story. And the shorthand version, label for the tragedy is called the Anti-Communist Crusade. And so you have a figure like William F. Buckley, who was a CIA agent, who founds a magazine right at the time that the Congress for Cultural Freedom is supporting all of these front operations. Irving Kristol was head of one. They were setting up. I asked Joe Sobrin before he died, was it National Review of CIA front? And he said, well, I don't know. Well, no, Joe, you didn't, because you were just the dumb goy from Ypsilanti, Michigan, who idolized Bill Buckley and jumped in. And that's it's symbolic of the entire Catholic Church. They jump in behind the anti-communist crusade, supporting the United States of America, which is the country that is destroying their neighborhoods. Didn't you guys know that these people are at war with the Catholic Church? No, they didn't know. And so you had this rise of this thing called conservatism. Right. Buckley was one of the founding fathers. Russell Kirk was another. I knew the publisher personally. I knew Henry Regnery, who published both of their books. This is mid-50s. All of this, the culture, Congress of Cultural Freedom, all these people are involved. And Henry Regnery was a noble guy. I never figured out why he would be interested in a nobody like me, but he was. He invited me to his farm up in Michigan. We spent a lot of time in conversation, and tragically, he died before I could ask him the real questions, because I'm too stupid when I'm there. You know, I don't know enough. So in a conversation, he tells me his father ran America First. His father was the treasurer for America First. His father had the list for America First. That is the most valuable list in the United States of America. And his father had it. And guess what happened? One day after Pearl Harbor, the FBI shows up and takes the list. Mm-hmm. That is the end of the true American conservatism, which was known as America First.
Right, the isolationism. Charles
The people of, in my neck of the woods now, the Irish and the Germans, I know it's hard to understand, but the Irish and the Germans are not particularly fond of the English. I don't know what this, for some crazy reason.
Yeah.
Maybe it was the way the English treated the Irish for centuries as their landlords. Maybe it was the potato famine. Maybe it had something to do with that. But the fact of the matter was that this neck of the woods did not support the war.
And Germans didn't want it because...
The Germans didn't want it either. Now, I'm biracial. I'm Irish and German. So why am I supposed to go along with basically the WASP crusade against the Catholic Church? Well, the short answer to that question is conservatism, as confected by William F. Buckley. And it had a disastrous effect on the Catholic mind, all the way up, what should I say, to the Iraq War, when it fell apart. We can talk about when conservatism fell apart. It is a completely defunct operation now. The great symbolic gesture here is Robbie George at National Review denouncing Donald Trump as not a true conservative. Well, who are you, Robbie? I mean, did you ever get elected to any office? So it just showed the whole failure of that movement. I think that was Pope Francis and Donald Trump basically marked the end of conservatism, or whatever it was worth. And in my sense, it was basically good riddance. It was a CIA front operation from the beginning.
All right. So we would, maybe I could qualify that by saying American conservatism, or this, because in the past, you've mentioned many times the subordination of Catholics in this country to Americanism. And it seems like this Americanism is this imperialist, WASP-driven foreign policy, succeeding what was the English imperial mindset after the Second World War, you know, filling the shoes of England and just continuing in that vein. And the big question is for American Catholics, as you said, well, why do we want to go along with that? Because these are the same people who are trying to break up our neighborhoods. They did it in New York and Detroit and Philly and in Chicago and wherever else. But yeah, so actually, I was recently watching editions of A Firing Line, which Bill Buckley started in the 60s. And it's easy to see why he was so popular, because he's a very suave guy. He used big words, you know, and he actually let his guests talk. But all the same, I mean, he was on there defending Vietnam, and just, you know, he was essentially, he was just giving his reason for the anti-communist crusade. And then he'd have people on like, Noam Chomsky, for example. That was a famous
right.
episode.
Chomsky tore him apart.
Yeah. Even though I wasn't convinced that Chomsky pretty much said, this makes me feel bad, but I can't say that it's the absolute truth. I mean, he gets confused about objectivity and moral objectivity,
right.
But no, he was a...
This is cognitive dissonance. Here you got the yeah. Catholic guy arguing with the Jew, and you have to admit the Jew was right and Buckley was wrong. That he had an indefensible position.
That's true.
Buckley had a catastrophic effect on New York Catholicism. He had a catastrophic effect. A classic example is George Marlin, if you know George Marlin.
No, I don't.
Written a number of books. He was head of the Port Authority when 9/11 happened. He came out here, gave a talk, and he said that he was a teenager when Buckley ran for mayor. He never got over it. I mean, this was, if you want the cause of Americanism, it's Irish inferiority complex. That's what caused. So you have people like Bishop John Ireland who want to come over here and they want to get along with the big movers and shakers like J.J. Hill. That's Irish inferiority complex. And you have Buckley now who comes in and makes Catholics, they look cool now. He's got a limousine. He wears that seersucker suit. I love seersucker suits. I my son loves seersucker suits. I love to walk around New York in a seersucker suit in the summer. But the fact of the matter is that you betrayed your own people. You betrayed your own people because you wanted to curry favor with the rich and the powerful, and that meant the WASP elite at that time.
So what I hear you saying is that, correct me if I'm wrong, so are you saying that the anti-communist crusade that he was an essential part of, that he succeeded in getting many Catholics to adhere to, was incorrectly driven, or was it a case of fear-mongering, overselling the communist threat? What do you think about that?
Yes.
Like during the Cold War.
Yes, the Cold War. Look, it was the Soviet Union was never a military threat to the United States during this period of time. Never. It had to be kept on life support in order to keep these people in power. The same thing is true today. What was the main problem that Donald Trump had when he came into office? He would not go to war with the Russians.
Right.
It's all the way up to today. We've got the same thing. And the crucial moment in this history was John F. Kennedy. John F. Kennedy is the Paul Blanchard's worst nightmare come true. We got a Catholic in the White House. I was in Philadelphia. I was 12 years old in 14 years old in 1962. And I go down to Independence Mall, and there's a Catholic president on the platform, a Catholic governor of the state of Pennsylvania, and a Catholic mayor of Philadelphia. Well, this is the Catholics taking over, you know? And at this point, John F. Kennedy was murdered. We all know he was murdered. Maybe you think it was a lone deranged gunman.
No,
I don't know.
I don't think so. At all.
That's what Alan Dulles told Walter Cronkite to say on CBS News five minutes before, and that was the official explanation. John F. Kennedy was killed because he was going to bring an end to the Cold War. He had back channel connections with Khrushchev through Pope John the 23rd. He was going to end the Cold War. And believe me, if you're president of the United States and you threaten the gravy train of the military industrial complex, your life hangs in the balance. So I see a direct connection between what Kennedy tried to do and what Trump tried to do. Those people are still in power.
Yeah. No, I agree. We call them the deep state now. No, I agree. I don't believe that the Kennedy assassination was done by. Sorry, you're breaking up. I didn't hear. Okay. There was a delay there. Okay, I'm sorry.
You don't believe. Go ahead. Continue.
No, I said I'm not sold on the Warren Commission story of the Kennedy assassination. I do think it was a conspiracy. There's enough evidence to point towards that. It's really all over the place. If you care to look. Enough scholarship has been done. This is one of the reasons why I'm a fan of Jesse Ventura. I mean, for that reason alone, he's not afraid to say this sort of thing.
Right.
But yeah, it makes sense. I mean, Alan Dulles was the guy who became the director of the CIA. He was the guy who was famously in Bern, Switzerland in World War II. He was known for doctoring the diaries of Count Galeazzo Ciani, who was the... who was the foreign minister of Mussolini. So he had experience in that, in disinformation.
Yes.
So it's no surprise that guys like that would be interested in maintaining this antagonism because, it was their lifeblood. And hey, if we make peace with the
Russians. It was their lifeblood. They knew that. The crucial figure here was C.D. Jackson. Nobody knows who C.D. Jackson was. David Wemhoff covers this in his book, John Courtney Murray, Time, Life, and the CIA. He was a full-time employee of the CIA and a full-time employee of Time magazine at the same time. This is how closely this was connected, the interconnection here. And he said, right at the time, at 53, the crucial turning point, Mossadegh, he said, America just lost its best salesman. Joseph Stalin just died. This is the way he felt. Best thing that ever happened to these people was the Soviet Union because they could dangle this over the heads of dumb Catholics and get Catholics to internalize the commands of their oppressors. That's the great tragedy of the Catholic Church to this day. Now we have the proxy warriors. Who are the proxy warriors of these people in the Catholic Church right now? The Jesuits. James Martin, yes. Proxy warrior of the oligarchs, because the agenda now is homosexuality.
Right, they're the fifth column now, so they needed another crusade, I guess, to continue this distraction. But this time, it's attacking even more seriously. It's getting to the core of morality itself. Never mind revelation, but just the natural law. Like it's just going against what we can know from nature. Okay, so Kennedy's plan was to end the Cold War, you say, and Khrushchev was a willing partner because after Stalin died, they initiated this cooling off under Khrushchev, where he famously denounced Stalin as a dictator and a monster.
Yes, yes.
And Stalin, but okay, so the Soviets never threatened the U.S. One can ask about the nuclear deterrent. I mean, I know, but the thing is, so we formed NATO, right? Because we felt we had to guarantee the security of Western Europe against the communist takeover. Do I hear you saying that that was not a wise move, or how? So, what would the Catholic policy have been? Do you think would it have been the formation of a military alliance, or not?
Which period in history? Which period?
NATO,
in history?
1949.
1949. Okay.
NATO was formed, right?
Okay. We have to look that in the context. Look at the context. What was the first plan? What was the first plan after World War II? It was the Morgenthau plan
for Germany. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, this is the context. This is the way we're going to deal with it. This is Jewish revenge against Germany. Morgenthau plan is a long term for genocide. They were going to, they say now, oh, he's going to reduce it to an agricultural nation. That is genocide, even on those terms, okay? Because Germany simply cannot support itself. It doesn't have enough land to support itself, okay? But it was more than that. we know the story. Look up Hungerjahr, 1947. I lived in Germany for 3 years. I was a teacher there. Look that up. This is when the Germans, when the Allies under the Morgenthau Plan were starving the Germans to death. And at this point, the Catholic Church rebelled. The great Cardinal Frings of Cologne said to basically the German people, if there's a boxcar out there with food in it, break in it and take it. It's not theft. If you see a coal train there and your family is freezing to death, you have a right to take that coal and heat your apartment or your house. Right. And the Germans coined a verb. It was called Fringsen. Fringsen is not, ist kein Diebstahl. Fringsen is not theft. Okay. And so at this point, the adults in the room worked up and they realized our foreign policy has been hijacked by some crazy Jew who has this crazy control over Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. And they just basically, Harry Truman understood this. Morgenthau wanted to go to the conference in Canada, Bretton Woods, one of the Bretton Woods things. And he said, no, you're not going. And Morgenthau said, I'm going to resign if you don't. And he said, fine, I accept your resignation. Yeah. At that point, the adults walked into the room and Marshall showed up at Harvard. General Marshall showed up at Harvard and brought about a new plan called the Marshall Plan, which was basically to fight poverty. Now, there were ulterior motives here because at this point, it became clear, I think, to these people in the room that maybe they didn't know this specifically, but Harry Dexter White was a communist. He was working for the Soviet Union. The plan was pretty much make the situation so intolerable in Germany that they will invite the Soviet Union in to take over Western Europe. Once the Morgenthau Plan disappeared, then you had the Marshall Plan. Then there was a different program. Okay, we're not going to starve the Germans to death. But now, and I did this in my little ebook called Werner Heisenberg and Jewish Science. Now there's a new program. It's social engineering. It's exactly social engineering. It was a more ruthless version of the social engineering that was being inflicted on the United States of America, Catholics in America. And it involved the systematic undermining of the sexual morals of the German people, which is a catastrophe whose result, the effects are still being felt.
Well, absolutely. No, I know about this. And you've written, I remember reading about this, that the creation of pornography and, you know, the taking away of all the moral restrictions in the theaters, in the newspapers, and on film, and the result is that you get this big deluge of pornography, and that was the goal.
That's right.
Okay, so the Marshall Plan was, if it wasn't an exercise of charity, at least it had strings attached. You know, it was meant to keep these countries within the American orbit.
To get back to your original question, I think NATO, the purpose of NATO was to colonize Germany. It established all these military bases in Germany and basically said, we're protecting you from the Soviet Union. But I think the real purpose was the colonization, the permanent colonization of Germany and of Western Europe.
So colonization, how? Was it in terms of, because we still have military installations in Germany, which I really can't stand. There's no need for it. With just like the cultural colonization?
Well, it was both. It was both. You had first of all, every single magazine, every single newspaper, every single TV show, every single film had to get a license from the occupying power, from the Americans. And it was a Jew from New York City who handed out the licenses. Yes. So you had this ruthless Jewish control over the mind of the German people. Okay, you had to grovel before this Jew from New York City to get a license. And then when you got the license, you had to toe the line. And the line at that point was Alfred Kinsey. This was the tip of the spear. And it basically, you had all of these magazines like Stern. The magazines were the vehicle of information in Germany at this point, because television was just, you know, ugly. Little box with black and white pictures. It was ugly. But magazines, and the magazines started doing articles on the Kinsey Report. The word report entered the German language at this point. It's not a German word. Bericht is the German word. And suddenly report, and suddenly you had films like the Schulmädchen Report, 13 Folge, 13 serializations of the schoolgirl report, which is basically softcore porn to corrupt the morals of teenage girls. I was there. I was teaching those teenage girls when these films were being shown. I saw them bringing Bravo, this magazine, into class with them. Bravo had an advice column run by a man by the name of Dr. Sommer, whose real name was Weinstein, and his job was to teach these girls how to masturbate. That's what Bravo was about. It was a ruthless campaign of social engineering against the German people at the same time that their country was occupied militarily. So they had no choice in the matter. It was forced on them.
Wow. So we're seeing the two sides of the same coin. The example that you gave with Americans in this country, the American Catholics supporting, being called to support the anti-communist crusade, but at the same time, their neighborhoods are being destroyed. The same thing in Germany was happening to, I guess, the Catholics in Germany.
Absolutely.
Who were being asked to support NATO.
You know, the one man who understood this, it was Frings. Cardinal Frings was not only the man who told them to take the coal from the coal train, he was saying, this is an attack, this pornography, the term at the time was Schmutz und Schund.
Schmutz und Schund, yeah.
Schmutz, filth and smut, or something like that. Archaic words. The Germans are embarrassed when you say Schmutz und Schund now, especially compared to Kinsey, who is a scientist. You know what I mean? But right. Frings was the man who stood up to this and told them this is an attack on the German people, on the moral fabric of the entire German people. And I think at this point, this is, if you were Cardinal Ratzinger or Pope Benedict, these, now I'd like to ask him some questions. Were you, your Holiness, were you embarrassed by the terms Schmutz und Schund? Because he was the guy there at the time. And he wrote a memoir of Vatican II about how, decided on taking a new approach. The wall of Latinity had to be broken. And he goes along in this lines. I would really like to ask him, were you there? Which way did you vote on Schmutz und Schund? Did you think it was outmoded? Were you embarrassed by this? Were you embarrassed by American scientists like Alfred Kinsey, a completely bogus fraud funded by the Rockefellers to corrupt the morals of the American people? Were you intimidated by that?
That's a good question. He is still around. I know you've spoken to him in the past.
I tried to make contact with him through an intermediary when I wrote the Heisenberg ebook, which is a chapter in my Logos book, by the way. Okay. And this person, I can't tell you how tragic this is. This person refuses to make the connection. What are you doing here? What are you afraid of? What are you afraid of? If you don't stand up to these people, they will destroy you.
That really is tragic. So this is quite interesting. So from what I hear you saying, is this psychological warfare was a big part of American foreign policy. Not just American domestic policy against the church, but American foreign policy in bringing to heel not only the Germans. I mean, I guess you could say the French and the Italians too. But it was mainly the Germans because they were the focus of the recent war, and how this, you should say, how this social engineering really, I guess you could say, allow the American Empire to continue, is allowing it to continue because it's trying to break down national consciousness. It's sowing materialism, immorality, etc.
Right.
But at the same time, we're seeing now a pushback in Europe, thank God, from nationalist parties.
That's right. And I have to say, I think I played some small role in that pushback because libido dominandi was translated into Polish. And I did a book tour in Poland to announce that publication of that book. And on the first night of the book tour, I'm in Warsaw and the publisher's in the front seat and he's getting phone calls every 2 minutes, cancel the talk. Jones is an anti-Semite. There's going to be a big demonstration in Wrocław. Now the Catholic Church stood by me. The first talk was at the chancery of the Archdiocese of Warsaw. They stood beside me. I had a packed crowd, people all around the block having their books autographed. And then we went to Wrocław the next day, and there was no one there. Six cop cars, no demonstrators. So I'm in Argentina about 2 years later, and I get an email, and the email is basically, between your book, Libido Dominandi, and the Polish bishop's statement on gender ideology, which came out about 2 months after my book tour, you destroyed gay marriage in Poland. So the point I'm trying to make here is the recipe for success is solidarity.
Yeah.
Is solidarity. You need Catholic solidarity, and if you have it, you will defeat these people. Tell that to the people at Catholic U, okay?
Yeah.
Tell that to the people at Catholic U. Because I have my own little story about, I have a Catholic U story, if you want me to tell you that too.
Sure, sure. But before you do, let me just sum up about, okay, so solidarity, taking a cue, of course, from the Poles who were organizing in 1981 in Gdańsk against the communist regime in Poland. So the question is, the big question is, how do we get solidarity in this country? And it has to come from us. It has to come from the leadership. The fact that we're forced to choose between Democrats and Republicans is a real tragedy in itself. And I've been arguing for some time now that there needs to be a Catholic third party, just like there was in Germany, the Zentralpartei,
right,
which was used to moderate the Prussian militarists. You know, there have been arguments that, you know, I think Cardinal Dolan lamented that Catholics are unwelcome in the Democratic Party. And I'm thinking, well, why would you even want to step foot inside that organization? Because it's pro-abortion. You know, there's no possibility of having any kind of resolution, you know?
Right.
So solidarity is the way to break this impasse, or rather this stranglehold over American foreign policy, which, if it's not run by the WASP anymore because they're dying off, then it's by the Jewish neoconservatives.
Right.
Those who are the friends of Israel, the friends of the Zionists, and really have gotten our feet stuck in the mud in the Middle East for decades now.
Right.
Okay, so what is your Catholic U story?
Okay, so I'm scheduled to give a talk at Catholic University. It's on architecture. I have written books on architecture. It's called Living Machines. It was a symposium on architecture. I'm ready to give my talk. I get a call. This is in a series, not just me. I'm part of a series. Mm-hmm. My talk has been canceled. Okay, not only has my talk been canceled, the entire series has been canceled. Now, why is that? Well, because the SPLC called up a dean at Catholic U and said I was an anti-Semite. Now, did that dean call me? That dean, I assume he was a Catholic. Did he call a fellow Catholic and say, wait a minute, I'm hearing this story. Is this true? No. He immediately cancels the whole thing, the whole thing. And then other people who don't even know me can't get to speak there. Now, this is a tragedy. Mm-hmm. This is the exact opposite of what happened in Poland. Here you got a Catholic throwing a fellow Catholic under the bus because some guy from a corrupt operation called the SPLC that launders money and it has offshore accounts that has a completely notorious because this dean panics. Mm-hmm. This is outrageous. Yeah. At the same time, okay, what's the hot news at Catholic U at the time I get canceled? It wasn't my cancellation, although they did do an article on it. It's this Italian chick from New Jersey who is on America's Got Talent. Okay, I don't know whether you remember her name. It's 10 years ago now. Is it Barberini or something like that?
Yes, actually, I do remember this.
Okay, so
I've heard about it because I wasn't here. I wasn't down here.
Yeah, well, look it up.
This happened, but
look it up. America's Got Talent. She is. They're basically calling off school at Catholic U to watch her on television that night. Okay, so she goes on. I don't think she won anything. So what is she doing now? Well, after a career as a pornographic film star, she is now in jail for drug dealing. Okay, what type of education did this girl get at Catholic University?
Mm.
This is tragic. This is tragic, and it goes back to what I was saying, this Catholic inferiority complex. You got to get over it. We got to get over it. They are going to destroy us. They are in the process of destroying us. By us, I mean Catholics. And we have people who are rushing to work for them in helping to destroy fellow Catholics. This is the whole history of the church in the United States in the post-World War II period.
No, I agree. And you know what? I forget her first name, but I do know who you're talking about. And I have heard this about, you know, what she ended up doing and how she's currently in prison. Yes. And it is tragic. Having taught a Catholic for a while, I can say that it's there is a way to get a good education. Unfortunately, you can't account for what some people do with their lives afterward. I mean, as a priest, I know, has said about Catholic University, it is the ground zero of the Cultural Revolution of this country, because of what Father Charles Curran did, ex-Father Charles Curran did.
Absolutely.
In rejecting the Humanae Vitae. And so
I have a chapter on that in the Kroll biography. It had a catastrophic effect on the church. Most people don't understand this. The people at Notre Dame are suppressing it. But basically, when the bishops backed down on Curran, Kroll was not in the loop. Kroll said, well, just let his contract expire. The bishops backed down. They reinstated him. They promoted him. And there was one man in South Bend, Indiana, who got the message. And that was Father Theodore Hesburgh. So within 6 weeks of this, he issues the Land O'Lakes Statement. Because he knew, back to Cardinal Kroll, I said, what do you think of the Land O'Lakes Statement? He said it was alienation of church property. In other words, Hesburgh stole Notre Dame from the Catholic Church. And at that point, he did it because he knew the bishops were cowards. If they can't enforce, if they can't let a professor go at Catholic U, they're certainly not going to do anything about Notre Dame. And this, I spoke with the bishop, Bishop Pursley, who was bishop at that time. He was ready to put them under interdict. And he got no support from the bishops, and he got no support from Rome. And that moment of opportunity passed. And now you have the tragedy of Catholic education in the United States, the secularization of Catholic education.
Yeah, well, it's become the new normal, unfortunately. I mean, I went to the University of Scranton in Pennsylvania, Jesuit school, and it's the same thing. It's what I'm hearing. There's very little objectivity. And it's actually where I started to go to Latin Mass, and I found out, well, you know, this, it's quite a difference here, quite a difference in what I'm learning there and what I'm learning in Mass. Okay, so we're finding that this American foreign policy has a lot to do with, for us as Catholics, has a lot to do with the psychological warfare and the covert means by which the powers that be in this country were going after the church, which really prevented, obviously, any kind of Catholic identity from working itself into American foreign policy and having any kind of good effect. So when something else which has intrigued me from a Catholic point of view, as a Catholic, so we could say that this state of affairs lasted until the Soviet Union fell. And then we saw a new shift with this American neoconservatism and the spreading of NATO and the continuance of the alliance without any real purpose.
Right. Absolutely.
So what intrigued me after the fall of the Soviet Union was the breakup of Yugoslavia. I was in high school when this happened, and I remember reading about this in Newsday when I was back on Long Island, and how we were painting the Bosnian Serbs as the worst kinds of people in the world. Like they were just automatically ex post facto guilty, a priori guilty of all kinds of tragedies inflicted upon the Muslims and the Croats, chiefly the Muslims. And then, you know, the research that I've done after this, I've learned that the same kind of thing was happening. The same kind of deception game was being played to lure not only the American populace, but also the Catholics, because we're grouped into the people whose support they would want. Of course, you're going to go support the Bosnians. Why? Well, because of what the Serbs are doing. What are the Serbs doing? They're committing ethnic cleansing. They set up concentration camps. Remember those?
Sure.
And they're trying to take over and destroy a nation which is recognized internationally in the UN. So we have to stop this. And albeit it was done under the auspices of the UN, to me it represented this continuation of what I've come to see as a very un-Catholic, neo-imperial behavior of the U.S. You've written two books about Medjugorje, one of which I read called The Medjugorje Deception, and that's given to me another angle on the whole war over there and how Croatian nationalism was really ramped up again by these supposed apparitions. I don't like you. I don't buy them at all. And I'm waiting, not on pins and needles, but still waiting and waiting for the Holy Father to actually say something about this.
Well, don't hold your breath because it's heading in the opposite direction right now. This is another tragedy of the Francis papacy.
Yeah.
They sent a pole over there to investigate Medjugorje about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes back and says, well, I'm not saying that it's true, but all those pilgrims need to be taken care of. And this is the thin end of the wedge. So yeah. Medjugorje was involved in Croatian nationalism from the beginning, absolutely from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
The two men who created this, it was not Sears, it was two Franciscans who created it, Jozo Zovko and Tomislav Vlasic, and they were both flaming Croatian nationalists. Jozo Zovko would set up the gerb, that red and white checkerboard symbol of Croatian nationalism, on the altar when he would say mass, which was a crime against the Yugoslavian government. Okay, so it was Croatian nationalism from the beginning, and they used this, leveraged this into basically breaking up Medjugorje, which was a goal of the United States foreign policy and part of the whole campaign to basically loot and destroy Russia. Because Serbia was made the mistake of being traditionally allied with Russia. Russia at that point was too weak to defend Serbia, and Serbia had to suffer. Now yeah. Russia is not too weak, and it's a different situation now.
Okay, so thanks for clarifying that. I'm actually writing an article called Three Strikes and You're Out, and it's how the Russians were just completely put off by, one, our involvement in the Bosnian War, two, our bombing of Yugoslavia, and three, the recognition of Kosovo as independent. And after that, that was it.
That killed dialogue with the Orthodox.
Yeah,
at that point, it was, oh, this is rapacious Rome and Germany trying to extend their hegemony through Croatia into the Balkans. And that was the end of dialogue with the Orthodox. No talk after that. So right. It was a tragedy. And tragically, Pope John Paul went along with it.
Yes, he did.
Now, he played a very subtle game here. So I met with Bishop Zanich in 1988
mm-hmm.
in Mostar. Bishop Zanich had just come back from Rome. He said, I met with Cardinal Ratzinger. I said, what did Cardinal Ratzinger say? He said, he agreed with me. And then he said, and then I met with the Pope. And I said, well, what did the Pope say? Now, this is after Zanich explained the situation in Medjugorje, explained that it was a hoax, it was a fraud. And he said, the Pope said nothing. And I think that was the crucial issue here. The Pope understood that Medjugorje was part of the anti-communist crusade.
Mm-hmm.
Medjugorje was Solidarity South. And he was not going to interfere with that because he hated communism and wanted to see communism fall. I asked this, I met with Ambassador Frank Shakespeare. After I talked to Zanich, I flew back to Rome and I met with Frank Shakespeare. And I said, is the CIA behind Medjugorje? Well, he said, I can't answer a question like that. But he said, I can tell you it is the kind of thing that we would support. And then I get the CIA, the information request form, send it to the CIA, send me all your documents on Medjugorje. So I get 20 pages of documents, 19 and three quarters of which are blacked out. And then they have the gall to send me a bill for $150. Ah. I wrote back, I'm not paying you $150. Send in an airstrike, but I'm not going to pay you $150 for cheating me out of information. And as you can tell, the airstrike never came. I stiffed the CIA. It's one of the great accomplishments of my life. You one of my great accomplishments. Stiffing the CIA for $150. That was real money back then. I'm sure they had trouble making up that deficit of $150 or whatever it was.
Well, they just had to squeeze it out of the appropriations bill, right, for the next fiscal.
They had to bring more heroin in from Afghanistan to make up for that.
Oh, boy. Okay, so this I guess we're finding now is that this the manipulation of Medjugorje was part of American foreign policy. This is your suggestion. It was part of the overall anti-communist crusade. Right. Reagan knew about it, correct?
Right.
And so here we are now. So communism is done, and Yugoslavia, which was a country recognized internationally at the UN, which saw its borders broken up through the recognition of its constituent republics as independent countries in violation of Catholic principles, obviously, but which the Holy Father went along with. And that was just a first strike in the new American order. You know, later on, obviously, we see the invasion of Iraq, which turned out later to be false pretenses. And the continuance of, and also the extension of NATO to the ends of the earth, it seems, or at least to the bounds of Russia, which has given them no small pause. We've seen we've gotten out of the ABM treaty under Bush, and we have now gotten out of the IRBM treaty, which was famously signed by Reagan and Gorbachev in 1987. So all this to me looks very un-Catholic on the face of it. It looks like this, like the US is trying to maintain this unipolar world, and it's just causing, and also the intervention in Syria. And it's the continuing behavior of unilateralism. As you say, in 1962, after the Cuban Missile Crisis, Kennedy was going to end the Cold War potentially. And it just seems to me that if we had followed Catholic principles of live and let live, we would not be in this position, awkward position with the Russians. We wouldn't be in this awkward position with the Iranians, and especially with the Chinese. I mean, there's this guarantee to 30 different countries of our nuclear umbrella. So, and at the same time, it's this, like, we have the right. It's this continuance of this very Protestant idea of the chosen nation.
Wait a minute. I think it's a Jewish idea. I think the problem with Jewish foreign policy, when the neoconservatives take over, there's no sense of logos here. They're in rebellion against logos, so they don't know limits. So the WASP had the sense of, well, we have to balance powers and things like that. That's gone. That disappeared when communism fell and the neoconservatives took over our foreign policy.
That's an interesting point.
Okay. Which also corresponded to the Jewish takeover of our culture. I mean, after the Catholics were defeated on the production code, the Legion of Decency, the Jews ran the media. They ran Hollywood, and they used it to promote pornography, which is what they're doing to this day. So that was the crucial turning point. I think the crucial turning point was when they took over the White House.
So that's a very interesting point now. When I hear you say logos, and I know this is part of the title of your upcoming book, correct?
Right.
Logos Rising. Can you give us a date on when that's going to be finished?
I can't, but it's we're working on it right now. We're editing it. We're laying it out, and we're going to roll it out within. I get in trouble whenever I say a date. My wife comes and beats me over the head and says we can't do it by then. So I don't want to get in trouble with my wife again. But soon.
That's fine. Just as long as we know, as our audience knows, that is going to come out.
It's over. And, the book is finished, and it's going to come out. And it's about history. It's about divine providence in human history, and how Augustine finally understood that all of human history is like a psalm, and time is like reading a psalm. And you have this conflict here between human freedom and divine power. you know, and you can't choose just one or the other. I mean, the Muslims say it's just Allah and you have fate and that's that. And the Americans say it's all dependent on free will and I'm free to do whatever I want. No, it's a combination of those two things. Right. And I think the end of the book is 1979, which I think is an annus mirabilis, because it was the overthrow of materialism. It was the Ayatollah comes to power in Iran in February of 79. And then Pope John Paul II, 4 months later, says mass in Warsaw in front of a million people. Now, these people could not have coordinated what they were doing. They tried. John Paul II wrote to the Ayatollah Khomeini and tried to get him to work out the hostage crisis. And the Ayatollah Khomeini wrote back and said, mind your own business, because he saw the Pope as a puppet of American foreign policy. And to some extent, the Pope was a puppet of American foreign policy. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying that this, how do you explain this? It's God. It's the Hegel would call it the Zeitgeist. He would call it the cunning of reason, die List der Vernunft. But this is God working in human history, and the shelf life of materialism had expired at that point, and nothing could keep it going. So Western materialism goes under the Shah when the Shah leaves, and Eastern materialism, Soviet materialism, goes with John Paul II. You have a religious revival throughout the entire world.
And thankfully, the Poles are still holding strong with this, as you mentioned, with the defeat of gay marriage. But their Paniswami, I think, is the Law and Justice Party. They're still holding strong. I know you've referenced this in your articles about the moral resurgence, the moral awakening, especially within the Iranians, albeit they're Muslims, so they go to the other extreme. So with American foreign policy, what I hear saying is there's this voluntarism which has been injected by this neoconservative Jewish neoconservatism after the fall of the Soviet Union. Now there's no more balance. It's just how much can we get?
That's right.
Like, how far can we push NATO?
That's right. This is chutzpah. This is the only Jewish virtue I can identify as chutzpah, which means pushing it way beyond rational limits to see what you can get. And so the classic example of chutzpah was the Ukraine, Victoria Nuland orchestrating a coup in the Ukraine, and that's where the empire stopped. This is a violation of basically the fundamental principle of Anglo-American foreign policy, which is the Mackinder thesis, which is basically you have to divide the Eurasian landmass. You can't allow alliances within the Eurasian landmass. You have to control that through playing people off against each other. This is what led to World War I. As soon as the Germans look as if they're going to sign a treaty with Russia, you have to declare war. What Donald Trump is doing, Donald Trump is the Zeitgeist. He's the Weltgeist on horseback or on a golf cart or something like that. But he's basically bringing about the unification of the Eurasian landmass, largely because he has capitulated to the Israel lobby, and the Israel lobby is pushing this way too far.
Yeah.
Way too far.
It's the boomerang effect. Yeah.
You're bringing about the exact opposite of what you intended. So the classic example of the cunning of reason is the neocon invasion of Iraq. We know what your intention was. It was to protect Israel. What was the result? You created Iran as a regional power because you removed the main enemy of Iran and killed them.
Yep.
This is the way God works in human history.
It also allowed the Iranians to increase their supply to Hezbollah and to get involved in Syria.
Absolutely. You neoconservatives created the Shia crescent. Well, that was a stroke of genius, wasn't it? So now the Iranians can ship missiles through Iraq, through Syria, down to Hezbollah in Lebanon. They've got 100,000, 150,000 missiles. Is Israel safer now?
Yeah, and the Israelis know this.
They know that. And that's why after 2006, they got their butts kicked in Lebanon, and they've never gone back.
Mm-hmm.
The Israelis have never gone back.
They know that the Israeli public will not stomach the sacrifices that will have to be made. And they know that their Iron Dome cannot protect the country as much as they would want. Like the damage will go beyond what's acceptable.
That's right. And has Hassan Nasrallah said, if there are no neutral nations here, if you attack Iran, you, the United States, attacks Iran, we're going to attack Israel. And we got hundreds of thousands of missiles to do it.
Because they know that we're attached like this. It's like an umbilical cord.
Yes.
Through which flows funding and military assistance and all that stuff. So, he's right, because this is the way it functions in reality. And he's actually a very shrewd political analyst, that guy. And he knows exactly what's going on. So this is, it sounds ominous, but, as we both know, God is in control, and he's not going to let something happen which is catastrophic beyond which we can endure, beyond which our faith can endure. I mean, that's just not going to happen. So I think we could wrap it up here, and I'd say we've covered an awful lot of ground. We've looked in depth at American foreign policy since the end of the Second World War up until now, And I have to thank you for identifying for me a shift going from this balance of power idea, which is continued up until the end of the Cold War, and then this chutzpah in foreign policy, this volition going as far as we can conceivably get. How far can we go? Well, let's keep pushing and pushing and pushing. But if the boomerang comes back to hit us, well, then we'll just have proved our enemies right. Right? That's
right.
How it seems to be working. So thank you for taking the time. It was a real pleasure to talk to you.
My pleasure.
Very insightful. Very insightful.
Give my regards to my friends at Catholic U.
I will. And I hope a lot more people are going to know about your name at Catholic. You certainly need to be known.
Jones@culturewars.com. You can reach me there, or go to culturewars.com to establish secure channels of communication that will thwart the psychological warfare that is being waged to this day against the Catholic people.
Right. So we'll keep this alternate discussion going, because it needs to be kept going. And so long as YouTube keeps going, and so long as you can keep publishing your books and your magazine, we're gonna have that. Please God, we're gonna have that opportunity.
Thank you.
Pleasure to meet you, Dr. Jones.
My pleasure. Bye bye.